And welcome to Doctors on Call on 95.5 WSB, a weekly show dedicated to helping you live a healthier and happier life. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Good health leads to a good life, but finding medical advice that is free and trustworthy is challenging. That's exactly why 95.5 WSB and the incredible team at Northside Hospital have come together to bring you this show. We're providing real doctors and real answers to your questions. Today, we're so fortunate to have Dr. Cantarori. And joining us, Dr. Cantarori is among the most distinguished and experienced robotic gynecologist cancer surgeons in the country. And we're taking your calls. So if you have questions for Dr. Cantarori, pick up the phone and call the number 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. This is your time to get your questions answered. And Dr. Cantarori, thank you so much for joining us on Doctors on Call on Sunday morning.
Thank you, Belinda. Thank you for your viewers, and I appreciate being here, the opportunity, and I'm glad to share what I know, and hopefully it could be helpful to your viewers.
I know this is going to be a very popular show because I talked about it with friends, and they were already asking me questions, so let's jump right in. Most women grew up hearing they needed a pap smear every year. But screening recommendations have changed a lot, I understand. Can you walk us through what women should actually be getting today and how often?
The pap smear recommendations have changed significantly from what most women think is necessary. So women were brought up thinking that pap smears are a yearly test, and that still has run into the minds of women till today. The pap smear is done to screen for cervical cancer, and today we have a test that tests also for the HPV, which is the cause of 99% of cervical cancers. Because of that, and knowledge regarding how the cancer progresses over time, the current recommendations are no pap smears before the age of 21, and from 21 to 29, pap smear alone is done every 3 years. From 30 to 65, the pap smear is done combined with the HPV test every 5 years.
Wow, that has...
As long as it's normal. Now, these are the guidelines for normal tests.
That has really changed since when I grew up and started having these tests. Okay, now HPV vaccination that you just referenced has been around for a while now, but I know there's still a lot of confusion out there and some hesitation among parents and adults who should be getting the vaccination. And is there an age where you're too late?
So the HPV vaccine came around several years ago, and there's no doubt that we still struggle getting the children vaccinated and the teens vaccinated.
When do you start?
From the age of 9 to 11, or as early as 9, but 11 to 12 is the ideal age. So as early as 9, 11 to 12 is when we pretty much do most of the vaccination. And then you can catch up until the age of 27.
Okay. And is there's a booster with that, right?
So the booster, the vaccine depends on when you're vaccinated. The later you're vaccinated, the more vaccines. So for the younger population, the one that's within the range of recommendations, you have the 11 to 12 years old, then you catch up before you get exposed to the HPV virus. And until the age of 29, this is only two vaccines, one and then repeated in 6 months. After that, if you are up until the age of 45, which it can be extended to get the vaccine, your immune system is not as strong. So you would get a third dose, one dose repeated in 2 months and then repeated in 6 months. So it's three doses for the older population, two doses for the younger population. And this covers not only cervical cancer protection, it's an HPV vaccine, which is responsible for anal cancer, oropharyngeal cancer, penile cancer, vaginal cancer, vulvar cancer, all HPV-related cancers.
Wow.
So it's not exclusively given or should be offered to girls. It's offered to everybody.
How effective is it if you don't get the second or the third, quote, booster?
If it's a long time, the recommendation would be to restart the series.
Okay, good advice. Moms and dads that are out there with young children, I know your primary care physician has talked to you about the HPV vaccination. So,
And I want to just clarify one thing. One single vaccine doesn't mean they're not protected. They still get protection. You know, there is still protection for the ones that miss the other vaccine, but more than people that have never been vaccinated.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. Now, when it comes to ovarian cancer, one of the scariest things, doctor, I hear is that this was a surprise to me. There is no relatable screening test. Why is that? And what should women be watching for or talking to their doctors about?
Ovarian cancer is one of those unfortunate diseases that there's no screening for. And when it's diagnosed, it's diagnosed at an advanced stage. So the symptoms of ovarian cancer are subtle, common, mixed with day-to-day regular symptoms that most of us have. They can be bloating, indigestion, mild nausea, urinary symptoms, changing your bowel habits, and pain, which is inconsistent, difficult to characterize. And all these symptoms, if you have any of those that are persistent, we're going to have one of those symptoms every morning when we wake up, no doubt. So it'd be a symptom that had to be persistent for a period of time. I think then that's the time to seek medical care.
Go ahead.
And even doctors hear those symptoms so frequently that many times those symptoms are not even pursued with the appropriate testing. We get a lot of patients that have been complaining for those symptoms out there for a while and brushed off, and they end up being something serious.
Wow. Now, I know a lot of my friends seem to have ovarian cysts quite often. If you have ovarian cysts quite often, is that a precursor to ovarian cancer?
That per se is not a risk factor for ovarian cancer. Ovaries are there to make follicles. Follicles are cystic structures. Every woman in reproductive age will create, quote unquote, a cyst, which would be the ovulation cyst from where that will grow. Sometimes it grows bigger than usual. Most of them regress. And it's not just one a month. Several follicles grow at the same time. So one follicle may grow a little bit too much, and it looks like they're very clear characteristics, what they look like on the ultrasound to reassure us. And we sit on those and repeat the ultrasound. They'll go away. Those are what we call functional cysts. Those per se are not high risk factors for ovarian cancer.
How do you know when you need to take a cyst out?
A cyst that is of concern is a cyst that continues to grow. A cyst that you operate those cysts that cause pain, and ones that have characteristics that look like cancer on imaging. So they're very clear characteristics that are not simple, not just water. We'll see solid areas. We'll see vascularization around the cyst. There are radiologic indicators that would suggest that the cyst is complex and of concern and that needs to be treated differently.
Okay. Folks, we are speaking with Dr. Cantaroria and on Doctors on Call, sponsored by Northside Hospital. Ladies, are you having problems gynecologically? Maybe you've had the HPV vaccination, maybe you haven't, Maybe you've had a pap smear that didn't go well. You want to talk to Dr. Cantoria about that. Give us a call, 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. And he can talk to you and walk you through that and take the mystery out of it. We've been hearing a lot about liquid biopsy. The idea that simple blood tests could eventually detect cancer early. Does this test screen for GYN cancers, doctor?
That's a category that can't be just simplified with a liquid biopsy because they can mean many things.
Okay.
Typically, one diagnoses cancer through tissue, a tissue biopsy. And liquid biopsy would mean that now you are looking for the cancer in liquid blood. So it would be a blood test. What is accepted, already approved by the FDA, are liquid biopsies to monitor the cancer. So there are ways you've been diagnosed, let's say, with colon cancer, lung cancer. You know the mutations of the tumor. And instead, and the patient goes in remission. And there's a suspicion that it may have come back somewhere you're not sure, not amenable to a biopsy, tissue biopsy. One can do a liquid biopsy and compare that, the mutations of what's gathered on that test with the what's evident on the tissue biopsy from the primary diagnosis. Now, what that test looks for are what we call circulating tumor DNA. It's looking for genes of the cancer in the blood. Genes that are mutated. That's what cancer is, mutated. Mm-hmm. It's a cell with mutated genes that cause it to grow uncontrollably. And that can be done and monitored. Those tests are available not only for diagnosis of recurrence, but also to monitor for recurrence, like Signatera, which is one for colon cancer that's out there that would test after surgery, even without evidence of recurrence. There's another concept, which is to diagnose early disease before any symptoms. And that's what we call a multi-cancer early diagnosis, MCED. Mm-hmm. And that's the new test. It's a test that doesn't look for mutations. It's looking for a cancer before it's cancer. It's really trying to screen for cancers.
Okay.
That is, there's no test that's out there that's FDA approved for that, but there are some on the market that are available for patients to do at their own cost. That looks for different things because you are looking at, in this stage, for not the tumor DNA. You need enough tumor in the body to be able to diagnose DNA in the blood of the tumor. So if you are looking for a cancer before it's cancer or really in the early stages,
wow,
you will not be able to diagnose that DNA because it's not circulating in enough quantity. Those tests, they look for something different. They look for hypermethylation.
Mm-hmm.
Short of having to explain something, will take 30 minutes to explain.
Right.
But this will actually allow not only to diagnose the cancer at a very, very early stage or even a precancerous stage, but also where it's coming from.
Okay. Great information, Dr. Cantoria. We are taking your calls at 404-872-0750. You're listening to Doctor's Own Call, brought to you by Northside Hospital, only on 95.5 WSB. And welcome to Doctor's Own Call on 95.5 WSB, a weekly show dedicated to helping you live a healthier and happier life. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Our guest in the studio today from Northside Hospital is Dr. Cantoria. He is an OBGYN and cancer surgeon, best in the country. And he's here taking your calls at 404-872-0750. And Dr. Cantoria, we're going to go back to the phone lines and speak with Candy. Sandy, you're on WSB. How are you today?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. What's your question for the doctor?
Do women 65 and older need pap smears, or do they even need, and how often should they have gynae exams?
Thank you for the question, and that's a very important question. So the age of recommendation to stop pap smears is that the age of 65, as long as the last 10 years have been negative in regards to your pap smear, which means 2 5-year apart pap smears with the HPV test done. And as long as you do not have also a history of cervical cancer or of precancerous lesions of the cervix. So those women at the age of 65 will, according to the current recommendations, not require pap smears to be done any longer.
And the, okay, thank you.
And the other part of your question about gynecological exams depends if you have gynecological organs or not. Many women already have had hysterectomies, and I think those women are very well taken care of just by their primary care physicians and making sure that they're of breast health, colon health, and overall well-being, and they don't need to have internal pelvic exams. But it doesn't mean you don't need to ever see a gynecologist. Any symptom that you would have from a gynecological standpoint needs to be addressed, vaginal itching, lesions, etc.
Okay, but generally, if you still have your organs, you don't need to get a gynae exam over 65?
You don't need a pap smear after 65. Uh-huh. You still need a gynecologist to make sure that your ovaries and your uterus are fine and the vulva, vagina. So you'd still need to go to the gynecologist.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Miss Sandy, thanks for the call. And you can check out Dr. Cantuaria. Do you want to give out a phone number?
Oh, office and phone number is 404-300-2990.
And he's with Northside Hospital. And which location do you practice in?
Sandy Springs location.
Sandy Springs. Excellent. You're listening to Doctor's Own Call, sponsored by Northside Hospital, only on 95.5 WSB. And welcome back to the second half hour of Doctors on Call on 95.5 WSB, a weekly show dedicated to helping you live a healthier and happier life. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Good health leads to a good life, but finding medical advice that is free and trustworthy is challenging. That's exactly why 95.5 and WSB and the incredible team at Northside Hospital have come together to bring you this show. We're providing real doctors and real answers to your question. Today, we are so fortunate to have Dr. Cantuaria joining us. Dr. Cantuaria is among the most distinguished and experienced robotic gynecologic cancer surgeons in the country. We're taking your calls, so if you have questions for Dr. Cantuaria, pick up that phone and call 404-872-0750. That's 404-872-0750. This is your time to get your questions answered. So jump on that line. So, doctor, while we're waiting for people to call in, I want to ask you, we hear the word immunotherapy a lot these days, but I think a lot of our listeners are still a little fuzzy about what that actually does. Can you explain in simple terms how it's different from chemotherapy?
So immunotherapy has been considered the biggest breakthrough in cancer care in a century. And it really changed the management of how we managed most of the tumors today. It's involved in every single specialty in oncology. So chemotherapy is essentially a medication which is given usually IV, but can give orally or even topically. And it essentially damages the cell enough so that it cannot continue to survive on its own and it dies. It goes through what we call in medical terms apoptosis. And the chemotherapy doesn't choose which cell it's going to attack. It attacks the healthy cells as well as the cancer cells, it attacks essentially cells that divide quickly. Immunotherapy is allowing your immune system, the concept allowing your immune system to do what it's supposed to do, which is to get rid of stuff that is not part of the body, bacteria, viruses, and abnormal cells, which are not part of the body, which are cancerous cells. However, the cancer, it creates within its environment a suppressive environment for the immune system to work. And what immunotherapy does, it changes this immunosuppressive microenvironment within the tumor to an environment where it actually works. So it's an antibody that, I can go into detail, but essentially it takes the brakes off the immune system, and now the immune system can attack the cancer cell effectively.
All right. That sounds great for those who are suffering and need this therapy. I mean, that's life-changing.
It is. It is. And it works better with certain markers in certain tumors than in others, but it's certainly life-changing.
Now, when immunotherapy works, how dramatic can the results be?
It can be complete response results. I mean, gone.
Really? Gone. Like cancer-free?
Yeah, cancer-free, yes. It can be that bad. That effective.
Yes. Wow.
That bad for the cancer, yes.
Bad for the cancer. Great for the patient.
Yeah.
Now, how can you tell when the patient, do you do them in conjunction with one another, or is it immunotherapy or chemotherapy?
It can be given alone. It can be given combined. We do it all ways. We do it both ways.
Okay.
When we combine it with chemotherapy, the concept is let's damage the cell enough with the chemotherapy that it looks even more abnormal so it can be recognized even better by the immune system. Cancer cells can look very similar to normal cell, and then the immune system won't recognize it. So by damaging the cell through radiation or through chemotherapy or other methods, it will be now more recognizable for that immune system that has been taking the brakes from it. So it's very active.
How is immunotherapy given? Is it a pill, a shot, an IV? How is it taken?
Intravenous.
Intravenous.
Yes.
Okay. All right. When immunotherapy, there are women with GYN cancers who won't benefit with immunotherapy. And if so, how do you figure out who's a good candidate before starting treatment?
Let me just correct one thing. When I say intravenous, it can also be given subcutaneously too. So, but it won't be, it's not as a pill yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was the question? Sorry.
Okay. Are there women with GYN cancers who won't benefit from immunotherapy? And if so, how do you figure out who's a good candidate before starting the treatment?
There are biomarkers that guide us to offer the immunotherapy to patients. And without those biomarkers being positive, immunotherapy is a lot less effective. So, for example, endometrial cancer, we check for a marker called MMR, mismatch repair genes. And if they are defective, immunotherapy works extremely, exquisitely well. And if they're proficient, if those genes are fine, then immunotherapy is dramatically less effective, and it's controversial to use or not. It's approved for it, but it's not as good. And there are other markers also that we can check for in the tumor, which is checking one. Another one's called PD-L1, and for certain cancers, that's what we check. Like for cervical cancer, mm-hmm. we don't check MMR; we check PD-L1.
Okay.
So depending on the cancer, there will be a marker that we will use to guide us to treat with immunotherapy or not in gynecological cancers.
Okay. For a woman who's been told she has a recurrent or advanced GYN cancer and feels like she's running out of options, what would you want her to know about what's available now that hasn't been available, say, the last 5 years?
So the next big wave that we are going through in oncology is a group of options of medications called anti-drug conjugates. These are antibodies that are made with a payload of chemotherapy stuck to the antibody. So now the chemotherapy, instead of being infused through the vein, it is tagged along to an antibody, and antibodies are very specific to targeting specific cells. They have to couple with a receptor on the surface of the cell and then only attack that cell. So the chemotherapy now is given through these antibody drug conjugates, but it will be then directed just to the cancer cell and be released only there.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like talking to you that the last few years, treatments and treatment options have just exploded.
It has, and it's very difficult to keep up because antibodies are very specific for markers. There are numerous markers in cancers, so you can make antibodies for a whole bunch of different markers. You can tag along different chemotherapies to those antibodies, so you end up with a large amount of options, and it's growing by the bunches as we speak. It's hard. It's just you have to keep up reading every day, every week.
Well, that's tremendous for the cancer patient.
Yes.
So I don't know if you're going to know the answer to this question, but ballpark it. If a female walks into your office and has a GY, you know, I'm not going to pin you down to what GYN cancer, what is her survival rate right now?
Survival rate is primarily dependent on the stage of the disease that she was diagnosed. They're more curable cancers even when they're advanced stage. That depends on sensitivity to the treatment. But primarily it depends on the stage of disease. Stage one, nearly all are cured. Stage two, a good 70% are cured. But stage three and four, we reach a cure rates of 30-40%.
How can someone listening to this show help themselves know their bodies more? What should they be looking out for on a daily basis as far as symptoms, knowing their body, so they're more in tune and can recognize these symptoms and get help faster?
I think the primary answer to that question is one can't be over anxious either. I think when we live our lives, and if any new symptom were to appear, one knows, and just be in tune with the body and be persistent for 2 weeks or more, I would seek medical attention for that. It could be a growth that you notice that's a visible sign, or it could be a symptom. But as long as it's persistent for at least 2 weeks, then I think it's worth seeking medical attention.
Okay.
And there can be any symptom, because there's so many symptoms. But most of the time, cancer will cause some discomfort and some change in a normal function of the organ, like bowel function, urinary function, GI function mainly.
Don't just wait and think, this will go away.
If it's 2 weeks or longer, is what I like to express, it's seek medical attention.
Okay, great. We are speaking with Dr. Cantuaria with Northside Hospital. He's in the Brookhaven area, and we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll have our final segment. You still have time to get your calls in. 404-872-0750. I want to thank Northside Hospital for partnering up with 95.5 WSB. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with our final segment. You're listening to Doctors on Call, only on 95.5 WSB. Oh, I love the music. Welcome to Doctors on Call on 95.5 WSB, a show dedicated to helping you live a healthier and happier life. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Today, we are so fortunate to have Dr. Cantuaria, and he is a robotic oncologic cancer surgeon, his best in the country. We're taking your calls at 404-872-0750. And Dr. Cantoria, Northside Hospital is your home base, of course, and it's also one of the most recognized cancer programs in the country. What has it taken to build a GYN cancer center at that level right here in Atlanta?
Being a GYN oncologist, it's a pleasure to work at Northside Hospital because it's essentially a women's hospital.
Yeah. It's where I had my babies.
Yes, it's so, and women are pretty much the gatekeepers of healthcare.
Yes.
Men don't go to the doctors. Women make sure their husbands go, their children grow, and all that. And so being part of a system that is very dedicated to women and with all the subspecialties in women's care available and highly recognized allows us to perform at the highest level. In my specialty, which is GYN oncology. It also gives us the luxury of having a large amount of volume for to treat patients. And as it's well published in literature, that the care is better in high volume centers because you've seen it all, done it all.
Yeah.
And you can perform better that way. And outcomes are better.
Absolutely. You serve as chair of the Northside Hospital Cancer Institute. Congratulations. And you're the principal investigator for the Georgia, is it NCORP?
Yes.
Can you explain what Georgia NCORP is and what it means for the patients here in Georgia?
NCORP is an NCI designation. So there are two types of NCI designation for the best centers. One could argue that, but it's really, that's the designation for academic centers. They are NCI designated cancer institutes. But there wasn't one until 15, 20 years ago that they developed a designation for community hospitals at the same level. So a community hospital that can replicate what an academic, top leading academic center can perform. And that's what NCORP is. It's the NCI Community Oncology Research Program. We are at a level that it's not just a community hospital with the run of the day, go to work, go home type doctor. We are at the top of our game. We have research available. We have clinical trials. We perform at levels that are highly recognized to be able to get this very prestigious designation, which is the NCI designation for a community oncology program.
That's incredible, because one of the things I hear from patients is that they don't want to have to travel to a major academic center out of state to get world-class cancer care. Can Atlanta women really get that level of care right here at home?
They can get it all throughout the state of Georgia with NCORP. So NCORP, we lead this NCI designation. We lead seven different hospital systems in the state of Georgia and provide the availability of these clinical trials to all these women throughout the state of Georgia. Northside Hospital is fortunate enough that it has it by itself a state footprint. We're widespread from east to west, north to south. We have infusion centers and practitioners throughout the whole state. So that gives us pretty much a state presence to be able to offer clinical trials. With NCORP alone, and with Northside alone, we have more than 100 rostered. Within NCORP alone, we have more than 100 rostered principal investigators. So our principal investigator is allowed to put patients on clinical trials because he knows how to do it, knows how to monitor, and knows how to keep those patients safe. And we have more than 100 rostered principal investigators within Georgia NCORP.
So a clinical trial is where innovative things are coming down the pike, correct?
These are NCI trials. So we can have trials that come directly from pharma, or we have trials that are come directly from the NCI. And those provide the latest and the best available treatment options for patients, both routes.
So you're getting the best of the best in a clinical trial.
You're getting potentially the next standard of care on a clinical trial. So a clinical trial is comparing what is new that is very promising to the current standard of care. And if it's better, it ends up being the next standard of care.
Oh, that's tremendous for the patient, Dr. Cantoria. All right. We want to thank you for joining us on Doctors on Call. You were at the Sandy Springs Northside location.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. You want to give your number?
Again, 404-300-2990. Thank you.
It was a pleasure having you today.
Thank you.
You're listening to Doctor's Own Call, sponsored by Northside Hospital and 95.5 WSB. It is a gorgeous Saturday out there. Traffic on 285, you know, is blocked in about a 2-mile radius. So keep that tuned right here to 95.5 WSB so you don't get caught in that snafu. You're listening to 95.5 WSB.